Right now I'm sitting here and I'm staring at the Google definition of narcotic, and it is saying a drug or other substance that affects mood or behavior and is consumed for non-medical purposes, especially one sold illegally. And, you know, I guess you could make whatever argument you want to make about narcotics, but at the outset, narcotics affect things like mood and behavior. And I believe that hope may be arguably the most important, valuable, and good, in my opinion, although I guess it depends, but good narcotic out there. And we're losing it. And it's an interesting thing to sort of talk about this, but like, you know, we're, what year is it? 2024 is the year. 2024 years since we arguably believe Jesus died, right? That was around 2000 years ago, right? That was the idea. It's what we're going with, right? And it's like, we're at a point where if you think, I've said this before, but I contextualize everything that's going on right now with the last 2000 years and go, what happened during this period and this period and this period? And I don't do it with some level of like, I don't use a magnifying glass, but I do kind of generally think back to like, okay, there was ancient Rome, there was the Black Plague, you know, there was, you know, the 1400s, and then, you know, we had the 1800s and stuff. And so I think back to all these different periods in life and, you know, which none of us were alive for, that we only have, you know, historical accounts on paper, you know, written by scribes thousands of years ago. And it's just like, no matter what we want to say about periods in human history, there have to have been periods, especially in local circles, because the world didn't all connect like it does now with the internet, where the entire community was hopeless and hope died in these communities. I'm sure the Black Plague was probably one of them. And, you know, there were times in war, I'm sure as well. You know, if you think back to World War II, 1942 to 45, I mean, I don't even have to get into that stuff. You know, like, hope is something where, like, if we spend time really thinking about it and investigating it, like, there are ups and downs in human history where hope is bountiful and where hope is dying. And I'm sure, and it comes and goes in waves. I think it's interesting because there are degrees to which I think hope is concerningly maybe misaligned, but where, you know, as a very strange, naive example, and someone recently mentioned this in one of the videos, you know, if you're in a relationship with somebody that's toxic and not healthy, well, and you have hope that it's going to get better, you know, sometimes that hope can ease the feelings of distrust and anxiety that it isn't going to get better, but maybe that hope is poorly misplaced, and it might be poorly misplaced for reasons that maybe you don't even realize while it's happening. Only until later do you go, wow, wait, I was incorrect, you know? And so I don't want to give the impression that false hope is always okay. I think maybe some people do that. They genuinely are like, hope is always okay. And I'm like, I don't necessarily think so. I think, I do think it's important to have hope in something all the time and to always have some source of hope personally. That is my personal belief and my personal take. If hope dies in one thing, it is important to have it in another. But it is important to remember that if we fixate our hope on one thing in a way that isn't sustainable or in a way that dies, we have to be very careful that we have cut off our circulation and our hope supply, so to speak, the same way we need, you know, food, water, and air and sunlight. You know, it's like we need hope. We need it just the same, I think. And I think that, you know, I'm not going to elaborate like crazy because I'm not remotely informed on it. But things, you know, like we're experiencing crises in this country and in this world that are religious based and ones that are medical based by nature, literally of the pharmaceutical nature when it comes to like how we're manufacturing drugs to give hope, you know, like we're doing this where people are living lives right now that are hopeless and they are 100% legitimately hopeless. They feel hopeless. They are without hope. They are down on their luck. They don't know what to do. And they have every reason and right to feel that way. And they don't know how to get out of that. And to those people, there's nothing but the utmost respect and understanding for that I have, and for people out there, you know, a lot of people understand that and feel empathy and sympathy for people in those situations. And that's just how I feel about people like that. And I think that we're in a situation where we're sort of trying to find ways to get hope back, and you know, we're creating synthetic solutions through pharmaceutical companies that do that, that are very dangerous for people because people can get hooked on them. You know, I'm taking a medication for ADHD, but it doesn't, it's not a stimulant and it doesn't do that. And so it's much different. And so, you know, I'm just taking Strattera, but you know, it's one of those things where I think that I kind of think back to those times and I think like, how did they get hope? How did human history not completely wipe out after the Black Plague? How did we rebuild? And I don't know because I wasn't there and I'm not like sitting in front of a history book in seventh grade, but I would like to believe that people found ways sustainably over the course of the thousands of years we've been around since the death of Jesus. Like, I'd like to believe that hope is something that it has been cultivated in different ways throughout human history. And depending on the period and the time we were in, I feel like there were probably consistent ways people built hope and there were consistent ways people lost hope. And the ways people lose hope, we don't have to wonder those because we're in them right now. And like, as an example, you know, I just mentioned my wife and I are not sure about having children yet because how on earth are we going to be able to pay for that? Because it's way too expensive. I'm not walking into a hospital right now and paying $40,000 to have a kid. It's like, that's just not, and that's insane to ask people to do that right now. That's more than people's annual salary. That's absolutely ludicrous. And that's just to have the kid. It's insane. So hope being absent and dying is something we're all familiar with, but how do we get hope back? And what are the different ways that we can sort of generate that hope for ourselves? And I'm going to sort of propose some of the possible solutions. And by no means am I saying I'm correct. Matter of fact, everyone here has every right to disagree with me and saying that I'm wrong and that maybe not that I should feel bad. But, you know, I think I'm sort of working on how to generate hope for myself. And I feel like there has to be a way. Like, I don't want to cry about this, but like, guys, like, the whole world, it's not that it's going to end if we don't have hope, but like, dude, there's no way that things are going to be held together on this earth in this life if we don't have it, right? Like, it's not going to happen. Like, the world's not going to stay together. And like, the Black Plague wiped out, I believe, correct me down there, philosophers and historians, correct me, I believe a third of the human population in the 800s. Those are the Dark Ages, right? Middle Ages, Dark Ages, wiped out a third of the human population. And that was back before people were as connected as they are today, right? Hope is like the kind of thing that you can't just remove from the human species and from human nature and from the human condition. You can't remove that and expect things to continue. It's like the glue that keeps things together. And I think about it, but there are two things that I'm kind of thinking about for hope for myself that's kind of been working for me. And there are also things that I think probably historically have worked. Number one, the first one is belief in, is religion in some capacity. It does not, I don't care what religion that you do or don't believe in, that's totally fine. That's totally fine. However, I think being able to lean on that belief that you have about religion is something that I would like to believe generates hope for people. There are people of all different kinds of religious backgrounds that are Catholic, Christian, Buddhists, Islam, you know, all these different religions out there. And obviously a lot of people out there there's arguments about the right one, wrong one. That's not what this is about. This is about the belief that when we are at our absolute worst, we have a reason to keep going. We have a reason to pick up the burden that we have been tasked with in the desert and keep walking, Saul Goodman style. You know, like that's what the question is about. And it's like, how do we get that? Well, I think thousands of years, arguably more, of human history, despite all of the different, despite the lack of information that all of those generations and periods had in comparison to what we have today, despite the lack of information, there's overwhelming evidence to suggest the strong ties that people had with their belief in their religion and their belief in the purpose of us being here being answered after we pass on from this life. And there's been an overwhelming drop in the belief in the belief of God and the belief of a higher purpose or value over the course of the last, I'd say, I mean, I don't know how long, 100 years, I don't know. All I know is I have a theory on why that is. I'll say it here, but maybe I'll elaborate more in a different video. But I will say the reason I think that everybody has decided to leave the church and stop believing that there's a God in any of that stuff is the fact, is literally because of the fact that hope was tied into the survival of human beings. So if you think of the way humans survived, think about it like this. If you think of the way humans survived for the last 2,000 plus years since we existed, how do we survive? We survived on the hope that things were going to get better in the sense, in sort of the, like the religious sense, but also like people would legit like people's needs. Imagine you're a farmer. Okay. Your needs are met based on if it rains. If it doesn't rain, every single one of you and your family dies. And so you have this belief and this hope that when you pray, it's actually doing something. And it's not just that that's random or delusional. When it you're doing the praying and you're doing the belief that that's the solution or whatever, and like the idea that it's like that action that you're doing in the practice of that religion and the faith and the hope and the belief that you have in that religion was directly tied to your survival for thousands of years. This is the first time in human history that that doesn't necessarily happen to be the case, because now not only do we have a completely different society built on different survival mechanisms like money and stuff and jobs and all this new crap that we weren't built for as humans, but more importantly, we have the most information any society has ever had in the history of the world, ever, in the history, in human history. If you believed in one religion and you believed in one set of values, you likely never interacted with other people that had other values ever in your entire life. And if you did, you were freaked out by them and ran away. And like, imagine trying to interact with somebody in, you know, the 1700s. If you're in the United States in the 1700s, if I teleported you to like the Middle East, you would be like petrified. You'd go, or China or Japan, you'd be like, I don't even know what to say, because the nature of understanding other cultures wasn't even something you could conceptualize. And this is why all these unfortunate things like racism and crap were such a big deal, and we're still trying to work through those problems. But that was literally how people survived, based on the beliefs that they had, and they lived in tight-knit communities because of the lack of connectivity with the world. This is the first time that we're able to all look at each other and look at all of our cultures, understand each other's cultures, but not only that, all of this, but like I said, our survival has become significantly more optimized. I'm not saying it's easier, but I am saying it's more optimized. We don't grow our food, we buy it. That is very different, and we can't undersell that, right? Our running water isn't something, we don't go down to the river and hope that leeches aren't there and viruses are there and go like bathe every couple of days, you know, like we did in the 800s. It's like, no, I take a shower, you know, or if I, like I said, with water, we have clean drinking water most of the time, at least cleaner than in the 800s, cleaner than the 1400s. You know, those guys that were on ships and stuff and they were sailing in the ocean and they got scurvy. Like, it's like we're not there in a vast, vast, vast majority of the world, right? And so the effect of the information and the access to the optimized life that we all live now has offloaded the responsibility of and the role that hope has played in our culture and in our lives. So it was like, if I didn't pray for rain and it didn't rain, oh gosh, oh goodness, do you see? Oh no. And so people had an intimate connection with hope, and hope kept them going. Now that we've sort of built a life without needing that stuff, we're just like, well, if I don't do anything, if I don't believe in anything, it doesn't really make a difference. And you can see how there's a disconnect between the role that hope is now playing because of where we are. And so it's a really fascinating thing to consider. And I'm sure other people have some really fascinating perspectives on that. But that's, like I said, I'm not even advocating that you should just suddenly have a religion or anything. But what I'm saying is that the absence of religion has affected hope in a very substantial way. And with the advent of information technology and the connectedness of all our cultures now, just at a moment's notice, it impacts our the way that we think about hope and the way that we think about the future. And so, like, what am I doing about that? I still have some of the values that I sort of was raised with, maybe religiously, but I'm reevaluating the way I believe in God and the way I believe in Jesus and faith and stuff like that because of the fact that I think that I was raised on a faith that was built 2,000 years ago without all the information we have now. See, so I'm reevaluating that, but I'm not outright throwing it out because I don't believe that throwing it out is for me and also isn't for hope. This is a... I'm going to give this in an if-then statement so that I sort of try to be generalizing about it, but also to be as non-judgmental about it, non-judgmental as possible about it. But the argument that people make is, you know, if you want to, there are people out there that just don't believe that there's a God and all that stuff because, and they justify that based on all the information that we have out there today. And what I would say is that I think that's actually perfectly legitimate for people so long as I would say that if I came to that conclusion, but I could still have hope, then that would be something that I wouldn't necessarily avoid entertaining. The thing for me is that I struggle to understand how to have hope if I believe that that there is no God. But there are people out there that don't care because they're like, I just want to take a dirt nap when I pass on and I don't care. It doesn't affect me at all. And then they don't necessarily have any hope or not hope based on what happens after they pass, something like that. You know, all I can say is just that if there is a lack of belief in a God, then there has to be some sort of hope that is either fulfilled from that or somewhere else, you see. And for me, I sort of have the idea that you know, whatever happens at the end of my life, there will be something that happens, something. It's not just going to be a dirt nap. Like, that's what I sort of choose to believe. And so I have some sense of hope there. And so for me, it's very hard to conceptualize the world without that. But if there was a way to do that, would I throw it out? Well, I don't think so. If you could raise the curtain and it was the Wizard of Oz and you could prove to me that there is no God, would I be okay with that? Well, as long as there was a way I could generate hope. Do you see what I'm saying? Like, that's kind of how I say it and how I see it. And so we're at a point where we have to start considering, like, where do we get our hope from? Well, we get our hope from the belief in something that generates that. And religion, for the last thousands and thousands of years, since it was so tied to our survival, that's where we got it from. And now that our survival has been optimized this well, we have to start considering alternatives. The second one, it was a very long one, but I wanted to really, I've been thinking about that for a long time, you can tell. Now, what's the second one and the last one? The other one is the hope in myself. And what I mean specifically in that, more the hope in my ability. This gets into a very interesting sort of conversation about delusion. And immediately I hope somebody snips that and makes it into some crazy soundbite and I sound like a crazy person, but I'm serious. I've had this thought about delusion before. Delusion versus regular beliefs, right? So, you know, if you believe something, which... I mean, everybody has different beliefs, but at what point does a regular belief about something become a delusion? And the answer people would say, and I've seen some definitions before, delusion is when it's a non-instantiated thing. There's no evidence of it. But the problem is there are tons of things that we have no evidence for that we believe. There are things that, as an example, you know, like, people, obviously, you can make a case for religion, that religion isn't necessarily 100% instantiated, right? Is religion delusional? Well, if you want to make the case it is, then you could say that. And if you said that, then you should also consider that we got here over 2,000 years of effort and work and labor. The human condition has spent 2,000 years getting here on a delusion. And that has to be accepted if that's what you sort of believe, and maybe that's fine. But what I was going to say, and this is where it gets interesting, is that in terms of delusion, I sort of am trying to sort of believe about myself that there are things I can do without evidence. And I'm sort of leaning on that belief. And I'm leaning on that belief based on evidence of other smaller things, but it's not sufficient evidence. And so... I'll use an example that's more religious based, and I'll use an example that's me based for two examples for why I would have hope. And this is a personal thing. I say this because you could have something totally different, and that's fine. And that's a good thing, as long as you have something that works for you. That's the whole point of this entire series. It's not about me being right. It's about being able to articulate for you what works. What works for me, I'll give you two examples that give me hope. The human eye, last I checked, has, I think it's either 2 million or 2 billion frames per second is the speed at which it sends signals. For those that don't know the golden rule, there is a mathematical formula in the nature of the way things have been made that is very creepy. It's the golden rule. You can look it up. I forget what the ratio is. There's the golden ratio. Sorry. It's the golden ratio. That's rule is different. I believe it was something like 1, 3, 5, 7, 11, 13. You can look it up, but it's a particular relationship that certain things have in nature. And what you'll start to notice is that there's an overwhelming amount of math in nature. And there are all of these sort of little small things that we can see in the world. But to take all of those things that are really incredible, that seem like they were by design, and to sort of turn them into something that's like, to take all of these things that are separate, that are not necessarily proving anything, and to then come to the conclusion for me that this means that there's intelligent design. Let's say I do that for myself. And then maybe you make the argument that that's actually a delusion because it's not based on sufficient evidence, but that delusion and or that conclusion generates hope for me. That's okay for me. So it is good enough for me to be able to look at the world and say, this thing looks designed, and I see some evidence of that design. I also see evidence that opposes that, such as like suffering and misery and death and famine and hunger and starvation and horrible things people do to each other. But I choose to, and I'm not going to ignore those things, but I also choose to believe that there's some level of intelligence because we understand intelligence. And so if I look at the world and I see that intelligence, and that intelligence, even if it's a delusion, that delusion gives me hope the same way it gave people hope for 2,000 years. And I can live with myself on that. I can live with that because that gives me hope as I sort of move through life. So that's my first one. My second one is, I have, and like I said, consider delusion, right? The second one is, with this channel, with this series, you know, this thing I'm doing, there are people out there that are responding positively. You guys really like the conversations I've had up to this point. And so I have this conclusion that I build from this, that, I set a goal for myself that I'd be able to have, let's say 100,000 listeners in a year. Is that delusional? Well, I have the evidence that people really care, and I have the evidence that, you know, some of the stuff on YouTube is going on. And so I make this conclusion that within a year, if I keep this up, I'd be able to have 100,000 subscribers, and I have this or listeners or whatever. And I have that sort of metric in my head, and I sort of have this belief in my ability to reach that as long as I show up every day. And it's like that generates hope for me. And if I'm wrong and if I'm delusional, that's okay because it generates the hope. And it's like both of these sort of work for me. All of this is challenging because none of it takes into account what happens when you get betrayed. So what happens when you put faith and hope in something, I'd say hope, but what happens when you put hope, when you have hope in something and it fails? What happens when something fails? If I did that and I said, I have hope that I can do this, and, you know, 6 months from now, YouTube detects some of the AI-generated art I have, which I do for a very specific emotional reason, and it goes, oh, you're an AI-generated channel, deletes my channel. It's gone. Gone. You know, I put my hope in myself and hope that this was going to work out because of the skills and the work I'm putting in. What happens when that hope gets taken away? And likewise, what happens if, you know, you pull back personally for me, this is one of the reasons that I think religion has been so sustainable, is it's very hard necessarily for religion to be as pulled away as quickly. It doesn't get rug pulled so fast per se. But there are times where it can get rug pulled. You know, there are times where something absolutely brutally terrible could happen to somebody. This has happened to everyone who's ever lived, where they live and they go, oh my gosh, an absolutely brutally terrible thing happened to me or someone I know. How on earth could there ever be a God? And immediately your faith is destroyed and your belief that there's something afterwards gone, and then you lose hope, and it's like gosh, like both that happens all the time. It's happened to me many times. I've been depressed many times, a big portion of my life, right? And it's like, what has to happen in order for human beings to move anywhere in life is for us to find another place to put that hope. But it's really scary to put that hope anywhere else because literally, like I said, you had it taken away or it disappeared or something happened. And it's like, it's not good enough for me personally to believe that we can live in a society without hope, that in a hopeless society, not for the long term. And if the world I just don't see the world becoming that. Not in a way that doesn't remotely parallel the Matrix. Like it would look like that, I would think. It would look like the Matrix in the sense that you have a world that has been completely and utterly destroyed and this is the remnants of the human race. Like that's the level of hope. Once hope is actually dead, it's completely dead forever is like my perspective. And so this is why I have such an emphasis on it because I care a lot about it. And I personally just think that like whoever's out there that has had their hope destroyed, I'm sorry, because that there's a very good chance it wasn't your fault because in the times that it happened to me, it wasn't my fault. There are terrible things that happen to people and there are terrible things that have likely happened to you that have also happened to me. And it's not our fault every time. And it happens for terrible BS reasons as just a result of the unfairness of the world. And consider the fact that like a hopeless world isn't something that I think that we were ever supposed to be in. I don't think the world was designed to be without hope. I don't think humans were actually meant to be without hope. I mean, I'll say this and then I'll probably conclude, but you know, my wife has some, physiological things that sometimes happen to her and happen to me when we're in social interactions. You know, I used to have social anxiety. My wife doesn't, but I used to have social anxiety. And you know how when you're having a social interaction and your body tenses up as a result of that, you know, there are physiological effects of certain emotions and certain things on the body. And, you know, it is not good for human beings to be sad all the time. Or happy all the time. They're physiological effects of perpetual emotions. You know, it is not good for us to be disgusted or angry all the time. It's not good for us. If you're angry and disgusted all the time, your blood pressure is going to skyrocket through the roof, you know? And so I say all of this because I've noticed, I think, that a hopeless society likely has there's probably physiological effects on us that we're having right now as a result of hope dying that, you know, and we're trying to fix that with medication and talk therapy and maybe to come to the conclusion that, oh, we have no hope and maybe we should consider believing in something again, you know? And it's like, I'm not proposing that my solution is a solution that's tenable for everyone or that it's the correct one or anything like that, but there needs to be conversations about solutions that work for people. And everyone needs to be willing, I think, over time to sort of, I don't want to say accept other people's hope, like that's not it. But I think that as individuals, we need to start considering if we're going to live in this world and we're going to share this world together, we all have to start considering that hope needs to be generated by us. Like we have to go out of our way to build that hope for ourselves so that we can have a hopeful world. There are people that have hope in each other. And I think that that's fine, and I don't think that's bad. But where hope comes from, you know, we have to start considering where it comes from and make sure that we don't lose it. Because a world without hope is hell on earth.